You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Taking some time out of our daily lives to sit down and have a little chat.
Chair for a chat with Nick Bat, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of Chat with Nick Bat, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Nick Bat. It's very good to have you guys all along this week, and I promise you, after last Saturday, a podcast that was not particularly football-focused with the conversation we had with Dr. Binney and Dr. Battazzi about COVID, and eventually how that was going to affect the NFL and college football, actually, was a big conversation topic for a moment, and all of that stuff, we are getting back to the nuts and bolts of the Buffalo Bills this week. Joining me for his first ever appearance with Chat with Nick Bat. I mean, the show's only been around for 3 episodes, so there's going to be a lot of firsts for a little while. But Sean Murphy, he is an editor with Buffalo Rumblings and is a frequent writer on the website, a terrific contributor, a very talented peer of mine on the website. And I was very excited that he was willing to come on and chat a little bit. Sean does one of the biggest, most heavy lifting projects on Buffalo Rumblings, which is that he profiles all of the players on the roster. He does it, you know, they call it the series 91 and 91 for 91 players in 91 days, but ultimately he winds up doing more than that even, and he mentions that in the conversation because as guys come in and out and get injured and whatnot, he still does profiles of all the players as they come in. So Sean has such a depth of knowledge about these players because he writes up about literally every single one of them. So I thought it was going to be a nice time to have Sean on and talk about some of the roster battles that maybe we're hoping are soon going to be actual competition at some sort of training camp in the coming weeks. But that aside, you guys know how I roll. I'm going to go ahead and play the ads for this episode. And then we will come back and Sean and I will chat it up for close to an hour. And then I'll be back with you at the end of the episode. Stay tuned.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this edition of Chat with Nick Bat. And joining me today is a peer of mine on the Buffalo Rumblings website. So Sean Murphy, an editor with Buffalo Rumblings, is joining us today. And Sean, how are you doing?
I'm good, Nick. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, appreciate you making some time to come on and talk with us. So one of the things that you are doing that is an ongoing, long-term labor of, hopefully a labor of love, it's certainly a lot of effort on your part, is the 91 players, you know, profile that you do, 91 and 91. So tell people a little bit about that project and where you are as of right now with how much progress you've made and how much you have left to go.
Yeah, it's funny because I picked it up a couple of years ago. I think it was Jeff Hunter used to do it before me. So then once Jeff left, it kind of fell to me. It was one of those, Matt said, hey, you want to pick this up? And I said, yeah, sure. And it kind of works into my nerdy side because I like to be able to look at who's on the field and be able to say, oh yeah, that's number 87. That's Cam Phillips, or that's this guy who, and everybody looks at me and goes, how the hell do you know who that dude is? And I'll say, well, I write the 90 players in 90 days article, you know, so I can kind of fake smug and big time a couple of my buddies on that. But it's one of my favorite misnomers because it's this year it's 91 and 91 because we have Christian Wade. But last year, even though we called it 90 and 90, I think I ended up writing like 108 or 109. Because as guys would shuttle in and out, dudes would get hurt. They'd get released with injury settlements. Buffalo would bring in a couple of new guys. They'd pull themselves in. So this year with the COVID pandemic, it's been a little easier. I think I just filed number 63 today.
Okay.
And Buffalo's only got 88 guys on the roster, I think. So technically we've got space for a little bit more. But I had read somewhere that they were talking about limiting how many people actually get brought to camp. So it's possible that they may only have 75 or 80 to pick from. So this 91 and 91 could end up 100 players. It could end up 75. This has been such a weird year. I don't even know where it's going to go.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's going to be different, whatever it is,
yeah.
Along with everything else that we all experience in 2020, it's certainly going to be different. Well, let me ask you this. So you obviously, like you just said, that situation where you know a little bit more, or you know a lot more about player, you know, insert name here, who's having a cup of coffee with the Bills versus, you know, every other fan who's waiting for them to sort of prove their importance to us before we give them a whole lot of our space, you know, space in our brain.
Yeah.
So as you have gone through it, at least this year, what sorts of things have you found interesting that you have noticed or that you've learned through your process profiling anybody?
My favorite thing is when I'll get to a guy who's at the back end of the roster, who I have no idea who he is. And then I'll be like, I'll formulate it in my head and I'll go, this guy's probably going to get cut. So maybe that's in my intro. That's how I'll feel it out. I'll, you know, call him, you know, a long shot of some sort. And then when I actually go to do the research on the guy, and it turns out that the dude, I mean, obviously all of these guys are great athletes, but when you see a guy, I think it was Delshawn Phillips this year, one of the reserve linebackers who was on the practice squad last year. And I initially looked and I was like, I don't know. I don't really know a lot about this guy. He couldn't make the roster. They picked him up halfway through last year. He's not going to be too big with all that depth. But then I looked at his size. I looked at how fast he is. I think he ran like a 4.640. Like, the guy's an absolute monster. So all of a sudden it gets the wheels turning in my head. Like, wait a second. This guy you could make the argument to keep him as a special teamer. You could make the argument to keep him as a backup. And then I end up, like, when I'm watching the preseason games, I start rooting for these back end dudes. like I feel like a lot of Bills fans are apt to do. We love an underdog, given that we are all rooting for one of the perennial underdogs in the league. So when we see a guy who is, you know, a week away from being an insurance salesman or an NFL player, we want that guy to be successful. So that's my favorite part, is just being able to look at these, wow, who is that guy kind of stories, and then just pulling them out of nowhere.
So as of right now for 2020, who are the guys that, I mean, you just said one, Delshawn Phillips maybe, but who are the guys, if the preseason actually were to happen and if it were to look the way that it normally looks, who would be the guys that you would be keeping an eye on that would be, you know, guys that you think have a bit of a dark horse favorite in your mind?
The position groups where I feel like there's just going to be more competition for either smaller roles or there's a lot of bodies. I mean, the running back group, obviously fan favorite is Christian Wade. And I knew that when his article dropped, that one had, I think, more comments on it than any of the other ones, because we love our guy Wade. But I think the undrafted guy, I think his name is Antonio Williams, who's on the camp roster as one of the running backs, is somebody I'm really interested to see, because he's a bigger bodied guy, kind of that thunder to Singletary's lightning, which we obviously have in Zach Moss too. But you can never hurt to have enough hammers back there. You know, I mean, when you've got a couple of running backs who can just keep pounding ahead and keep the offense on schedule, it works out nicely. Then you've got the wide receiver fight is going to be a dogfight, because your guess is as good as mine. Once you get through that, that top three is obvious between Diggs and Brown and Beasley. I'd argue that Gabe Davis is pretty much locked in as a fourth round pick. And then you've got Andre Roberts feels good as the fifth guy, as the return man, because otherwise we're going to get, you know, the heart attack duo of Ray McLeod and Isaiah McKenzie returning kicks. But those guys are going to be fighting with Duke Williams, with Robert Foster, with Isaiah Hodgins. I'm probably forgetting somebody off the top of my head, but there are five receivers who you could legitimately make an argument for in that last like 5, 6, 7 spot. Then you've got our guy Lee Smith, who I feel like Scarecrow and I sometimes have some throwdowns about Smith. I know he's a Smith guy. I am not a Smith guy. So you've got your Lee Smith, or do you keep Tommy Sweeney, or do you keep Jason Kroom, or do you keep some combination therein? You've got Voshon Joseph is coming back from injury last year to go with Delshawn Phillips, and Mike Bell are some athletic linebackers. So Buffalo's got a really good problem, that they have a bunch of young dudes who are hungry, who have a shot to make the roster, and they're going to end up cutting a lot of quality football players as a result.
Okay, well, you ended with a particular position room that really interests me, mostly because I have a dark horse guy that I think the Bills are a little sweet on, and that's the linebacker room. So, you know, the linebacker room, really, it's Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, right? Those are the premier guys, the three down guys who are going to be integral to what the Bills do in 2020. Then after them, you've got A.J. Klein, who signed a pretty lucrative deal and is certainly going to probably see the field a lot. He's got some experience with the defense, and he plays that very typical, stereotypical strong side, you know, linebacker with the, you know, taking on the tight end side, you know, sort of the body mover kind of kind of linebacker there. Then you've got Tyler Matakevich, who is a linebacker in trade, but really he's a special teams ace.
100%.
Then we've got Voshon Joseph, who is the draft pick that we, you know, cleverly IR'd for a hamstring pull, I think, last year. Tyrell Dodson, Delshawn Phillips, and Corey Thompson. So Corey Thompson is a guy who, you know, has at least seen the field, kind of been the number one linebacker off the bench in previous seasons, at least of who is on the roster as it stands now. But Tyrell Dodson is the guy who really interests me. Now, Voshon Joseph, obviously there's some draft capital that we invested in him. So there's obviously, you know, there's a desire to hopefully make that work out, you know, so that you spend your assets in a way that I actually get some return out of them. Mm-hmm. But Tyrell Dodson, as an undrafted free agent, went through a significant controversy where he wound up being suspended 6 games as a result of a domestic abuse and theft, you know, issue or scenario that he wound up with a significant other in.
Right.
And the Bills still, although he got demoted to the practice squad, kept him around. And I thought that when he saw the field on the preseason last year, that he made some pretty nice instinctive, you know, problem for the offense kind of plays where they weren't really getting by him for whatever he was responsible for on D. So how do you see if you, and then you've got this guy that you're a little sweet on, which is Delshon Phillips, right? So
right.
So it's, you know, you've got Matt Milano and you've got Tremaine Edmonds. Then you've got AJ Klein who has his role, and you've got Tyler Matakevich who has his role, although it's not really on traditionally. It hasn't been so far in his career
right.
on defense. How do you think the back end of this linebacker room shakes out?
Well, that's a lot of the numbers game on defense, I think, starts to bleed from other positions, because we've been on the website having this discussion today regarding the defensive line. And do you keep Trent Murphy around? Because if you keep Trent Murphy around, then you're going to cut a guy who's a special teamer like Darryl Johnson, or you're going to end up keeping 10 defensive linemen, counting Johnson and Harrison Phillips, which in turn means that you can't keep as many linebackers. And we just mentioned a bunch of guys. Your guy Dodson, when I was at camp last year, I was lucky enough to get a press pass. I was on the sidelines for 2 days trying so hard not to scream and cheer, because that would have been unprofessional of me, but it was really impossible for me not to do. But Dodson, as a rookie, was running as the middle linebacker the third team defense. You had Tremaine was running the first team defense. Julian Stanford was running team two. And they entrusted Dodson, even with all that he had been through and the suspension that was looming, to be the guy to call the defense when he was out there. So I almost think that if they have a horse in the race here, if they had to pick two, because I can't see them going with fewer than 6 linebackers. It doesn't, it's too dangerous to me, I think, to go lower than that, especially with how they like to stack their special teams with guys who are fast and who can really hit. I think that they probably go with Joseph and Dodson as 5-6, which means that Thompson is gone and they try to retain a guy like Phillips on the practice squad. I could be wrong, but that's just my gut, because as you said, they stuck with Dodson through some tough times, and they rostered Phillips on their practice squad for a while here. But they, both of those, or all three of those guys, are similar athletically in that they are run, react, hit type guys. Dodson and Phillips seem to be better in coverage. Joseph seems to be more a special teams. I mean, I think his instincts, from what I've read and what I've seen, he gets lost a little bit in the shuffle. He reacts, but he doesn't react the right way all the time when he's reading his keys. Phillips and Dodson seem to be more polished in that regard, but I think Joseph is a superior athlete. So that's where I think that he's probably, if he's 5 and Dodson's 6, or Dodson's 5 and Joseph's 6, that's where I think it would shake down as of now.
Have you written your profile on Tyler Matakevich yet?
I did. Yeah, Matakevich was one of the first ones. And it's funny because he said that one of the reasons he signed in Buffalo was that he thought he was going to be afforded an opportunity to show himself on defense. Well, when I reached out to the editor of Behind the Steel Curtain, and when I mentioned, hey, what do you think of Matakevich's possibility to play defense? And to paraphrase him, it was, you'd better hope he doesn't. So, because he's a special teamer and a good one. But when he was on defense, it was a little bit rough from what they said. So I don't know if that was wishful thinking on his part. I don't know if the coaching staff has given him or pitched it to him as the opportunity to come in and maybe some certain packages, but he seems to be that special teams, really the Julian Stanford replacement.
So when Medicevich would be given special teams, when Medicevich would be given defensive snaps, what linebacker position typically might he fit into best? He doesn't strike me just, 6'1", 235 as, a replacement for the kind of, at least the specimen that Tremaine Edmonds is in the middle.
Right.
But he's also, a little bit bigger than Matt Milano on the outside. So is he more of a strong side kind of guy? He does match up pretty well, being only 5 pounds lighter than AJ Klein and the same height. Is that sort of where he fits in on the strong side sort of stuff?
You know, like from a logistics standpoint, I would think so. But from what I have read or from what Brandon Bean has said, I think that they view him as a middle only guy. I could be crossing that up, but I think that he's actually said it, that Matakevich, Dodson, and Edmonds are the only quote unquote middle only guys that they have. Yeah, I think so too, because Matt, from an athletic standpoint, I mean, very few people are Tremaine Edmonds athletically, but Matakevich is such a steep drop-off athletically in comparison to Edmonds that I can't see him being the primary backup, which would give a guy like Dodson a really solid footing to get himself onto the roster, because if, God forbid, Edmonds were to be lost for any period of time, the drop-off, if they had to play Milano and Matakevich, for example, would be catastrophic for the way the Bills run their defense.
Yeah. So why is it that you see Corey Thompson being on the outside looking in? Is it kind of the upside of youth sort of deal with him, or is there something else that sees him not being one of the final guys who are still in the room?
He's an interesting case because he's been a valuable part of their special teams for the last couple of years. And he's done a better job staying healthy as a professional than he did in college. But he is, I think he's going to be 28. So when you're looking at guys who are younger than him, who are probably better athletes than him, who have had, fewer injury woes than him, it really just comes down to, like you said, I mean, it's a gut feeling there, where I would rather run the risk of taking some guys with lesser experience and more upside in the backup realm than I would hold on to a guy like Thompson, who's been okay. I mean, I don't think he's been a world beater. I know he subbed in for Zoe a little bit in 2018 towards the end of the year, or maybe that was Milano, excuse me, when Milano broke his leg. And then last year he got on the field a little bit defensively, but he's been no great shakes. I think that's a spot they could improve.
Do you think that Trent Murphy sticks around, considering, here's the thing that makes it seem hard for me to see them moving on from Trent, is that he's certainly McDermott's kind of guy.
Yep.
In that he is sort of a go to work, if there's anybody who's going to show up at one Bills drive in shape with having put in the kind of personal work on his own body as necessary, I would bet pretty high dollar that Trent Murphy's going to be one of those guys. He has the experience in the defense. He's going to show up in shape. He's going to go about his work. And in an offseason where, young guys like AJ Epenesa are not going to get the sort of tutelage that they would ideally be getting to contribute as heavily as possible in their rookie season, you're going to wind up leaning on veterans that, that Trent Murphy sort of is described as,
right,
to fill the void. So do you see a realistic way that they still move on from Murphy given the unusual COVID affected offseason, or is he safer than he otherwise would have been?
I have waffled on this one so many times throughout the offseason because in my head, I just say, yeah, he's gone, because I look at who's probably going to start would be Hughes and Mario Addison. And then if you look at Murphy as being the top backup end, then you still have, so there's three defensive ends right there with Hughes, Addison, Murphy. You've got Darryl Johnson, who is a great athlete, but he's really raw. I mean, he fell out of favor after about 5 weeks last year. I don't think he played a defensive snap for the entire months of October and November, maybe until the season finale. You spend a high draft pick on Epinesa. There's five defensive ends. And then you have Quentin Jefferson, who is a defensive end, defensive tackle hybrid at about 6'3", 280. So he could be a three-tech backup for Ed Oliver in the middle. But he could also be, I think he played left end a little bit while he was with Seattle. So there's six defensive ends right there. And then you've got Oliver and Starlatulale, Vernon Butler, and Harrison Phillips as defensive tackles. So there's your 10 D linemen. If we assume that Phillips is going to start the year on the physically unable to perform list because of his ACL surgery recovery, now we're at nine. Nine is an okay number, but then if you bring Phillips back halfway through the year after his 6 weeks are up, you've got to release somebody, probably from the defensive line, to get him on the roster. All of those guys are vested veterans except for Darryl Johnson. So you either have to cut one of the vested veterans and pay him his entire base salary because it's guaranteed after week one, or you've got to risk cutting Johnson, who is, I don't know if you were like me, but I can't count how many kickoffs that I watch Buffalo cover where my dad, we watch every game, and he's sitting next to me going, who the hell is that giant missile who just fired off at somebody? And it was Johnson every single time. So I would rather part ways with Murphy before the season and roll the dice on the younger guys and a guy like Addison, who has experience in McDermott's system, and a guy like Jefferson, who may not have played in McDermott's system, but he's a pro and he's been around, and I would at least try to rely on those guys to get myself down to eight. That's just me. And I mean, this is a Murphy on Murphy crime here, me trying to advocate for my namesake being gone. And the thing that gives me pause is that Murphy played his best football in the last 3 weeks of the season last year. So was that matchup based, or was that because he was finally starting to feel good after his own ACL surgery from the year prior to him coming to Buffalo? So I'm not really sure. Nothing that they do is going to surprise me. My gut says he's gone, but in a COVID-interrupted offseason, if they decided to pay him $9 million, to be the third defensive end and play 40% of the snaps, I think it would be worthwhile also. I could see them going with it.
What do you think about the tight end room? So you talked about Lee Smith and obviously your opinion of him. I probably have a similar personal opinion of him, but my hang up is that it just seems to be the Bills and Sean McDermott like what he brings to the locker room so much.
And they love him.
Yeah, it just is like, even if it makes sense to me, okay, he plays this very niche role that we could easily replace, you know, with somebody else. You know, it's Dawson Knox is a formidable blocker. Tommy Sweeney's a pretty good blocker. So just give Lee Smith snaps to somebody who's got a little bit more youth and dynamism, and you know, as dynamic as you want to say Tommy Sweeney would be, you know, he's got more in that category than Lee Smith does. I understand it makes sense, you know, when you're doing it on paper, but how valuable is Lee Smith's leadership and attitude and demeanor in the room, you know, to the Bills? Are they going to move on from him knowing how much, you know, do you think they're going to move on from him knowing how much they like the intangible aspect of what he brings?
Yeah, I doubt that they move on, to be honest with you. I think that he's there. And for those reasons, one of the coolest quotes of his that I saw was they asked him about Tommy Sweeney. And I think this was last year. And Smith talked about how great a kid and how great a worker Sweeney was. And he goes, listen, man, he's better than me. And I hope that he gets to be way better than me. Like, this kid's going to be great. I don't want him to be like looking up to Lee Smith. I want to be looking back and saying, yeah, Tommy Sweeney was just better than Lee Smith. And that's a great thing for a guy, for a veteran to be able to sit there and be like, yeah, my job's going to get taken by this young gluck at some point. And just for him to be cool with it and for him almost to invite it. That's the kind of people you want in your locker room, whether you're coaching, you know, NFL football or, you know, T-ball. You want the kid who's going to be able to look and say, hey, that guy's better than me. I want him to be able to go ahead and I'm going to bring him along. So I could see them again, if they go with four tight ends, it's probably going to end up Croft and Smith and Knox. And then you've got a coin flip between Kroom and Sweeney. I with apologies to Nate Becker, I don't think that Nate Becker is going to factor into the decision very much as it goes on. But that's where it gets tough for me, because from a future perspective, I would rather see them have Sweeney and Kroom on the roster so that they could do more in a spread type look. But there's something to be said about having a guy who blocks like an offensive lineman and who can run routes like a tight end. It's not like we could just throw Deion Dawkins out there. As much as I'd love to see him run a few more routes per month instead of just the one or two trick plays every once in a while, I think that that's where they view Smith's value.
If you had to come down between Sweeney and Kroom, you know, for your opinion of them, because I haven't given Jason Kroom a whole lot of my attention aside from occasionally laughing and chuckling at some nepotism accusations and, you know, remembering that he was somebody Tyrod Taylor liked, right? That's really all that I sort of remember of Jason Kroom, because it's been so long since he's, you know, been on the field and had any sort of meaningful play. So
yeah.
Remind people what he brings to the table, and do you think he has any shot at making at getting a roster spot in a legitimate fashion this year?
Yeah, I think he does. I mean, he was a college receiver at the University of Tennessee. So he bulked up a little bit to go play tight end. But I mean, he has that wide receiver athleticism about him, and the way that he runs his routes, in the way that he shakes, and he can go ahead and use his hands to catch away from his body. He's got a nice catch radius. Not quite as big. Sweeney's a bigger dude than he is. I don't legitimately have a feel as to which one the coaching staff would go for. That's why I would cut Smith. But if you've already like stuck Smith on me, I think I would take Kroom over Sweeney. And I think that I might be wrong in doing it. But I like Kroom's athleticism. I like what Kroom showed even with Josh Allen in 2018, when Charles Clay was kind of getting towards the end of the line there, we saw a little bit out of Kroom that I liked. They seemed to have a nice little budding chemistry going towards the end of the year. So I think that Kroom would be my guy.
Okay, well, so then I've got two other positions that I'm interested in picking your brain on. The last one, well, second to last one, the penultimate position, we will say, is the safety room. So you've got Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. Jordan Poyer now has his new deal, and they are a dynamic duo. We don't want to break them up. They're going to be there. Mm-hmm. But you've still got Saran Neal said to be a safety, although he's probably more of a nickel corner. But,
right.
You know, he's listed on the Bills website, at least, as a safety. Then you've got Dean Marlowe and Jaquan Johnson. So if we want to just set Saran Neal off to the side and say he's not really in this position room in the same way anymore, we can do that. But we just re-signed Dean Marlowe, and he was, you know, for a time, it was Bruce and Mai's favorite joke to talk about him. They would just, you know, pick up the bat phone, and anytime somebody was dinged up, Dean Marlowe could just be in shape at home on his couch, and he can come in and get meaningful snaps because he knows McDermott's defense so well.
Yep.
Last year he was on the team all year, so no bat phone needed, and they just re-signed him. But we've also got Jaquan Johnson, who is this interesting, a lot of people who kind of give it any sort of attention, he winds up becoming a little bit of a crush to people because he's a quote-unquote a football player.
Yep.
With, you know, some limited athleticism, but very much a, you know, easy to root for kind of player. So you know, do all five of those guys wind up on the roster? You know, are they, we going to carry four safeties? Is it going to be a situation where maybe they carry three and try to keep Saron Neal on the back end because he has a little bit of flexibility as far as that, as far as position goes? Or how do you see that shaking out as of, you know, July 10th, July 11th, 2020?
Yeah, I think as the saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I like that fivesome. Like you said about Marlowe, I always remember the game. It was against the Titans in 2018. And that was when, you know, the bat phone, the signal went up. Marlowe came in the middle of the night, plays every single snap against the Titans, plays great the entire game. And then the next day gets released and demoted back to the practice squad. And it's like, yeah, he's fine. He's all right. He'll be back when we need him. And that guy as your backup safety is perfect. And then Jaquan Johnson in the preseason last year, I think he was third in the NFL in tackles, makes the squad as a rookie, comes out and does a great job on special teams, doesn't play a defensive snap until that season finale, gets an interception that got, and it was a beauty on the sidelines, little toe tap thing that gets nullified because Kurt Coleman ends up with some bonehead roughing the passer penalty on Sam Darnold. So I think Johnson is a guy I'm real excited about to come in and to see him develop. I don't see him as somebody who's going to end up eventually replacing Poyer or Hyde. At least I hope that he doesn't, because I don't want Poyer and Hyde to leave. They're outstanding. You don't break up what is arguably the best, and if not the best, one of the best safety duos in the league. And like you said, I think Saron Neal is a safety in name only at this point. He seems to be a big nickel corner. We'd be better off talking about him as competition, I think, for Taron Johnson and potentially, I guess, EJ Gaines in that slot corner role rather than talking about him as a safety. But I do. I think that you keep Hyde, you keep Poyer, you keep Johnson and Marlowe as your backup safeties and special teams guys, and you have Neal as one of your big nickels. And then I think they'll end up keeping four corners, and then boom, you're all set.
Well, let's go to corner then, because I am interested in how the nickel corner shakes out. Taron Johnson, I like him a lot. I think that although he did a better job staying healthy last year, he was not as dynamic and missile-like last year as he was in his rookie season.
Yep.
So some of the shine comes off of him, you know, and all the dedication that we have, and the affection that we had for Taron Johnson fades, and now maybe we are open to other players at the nickel corner. So to me, the guys who I think are in contention for that, and you can give me someone else if there's someone I forget, would be Taron Johnson, Saron Neal, Cam Lewis, and then the rookie Dane Jackson. So, you know, as far as you see that role right now, do any of those players have more potential to contribute to that position than we maybe are talking about right now? Or is it really Taron Johnson and Saron Neal, and you're going to rotate through depending on what kind of a slot receiver they're going up against?
That's probably how they're going to roll with it. But I mean, Cam Lewis is a guy who's been around now. I think this is his second offseason with the team. He looks like the kind of guy that you keep around in the Dean Marlowe bat phone role, because he knows the defense, and you keep him on that practice squad. And if Johnson is hurt, then you can pull him up for a day. If you look at Dane Jackson, has that little versatility to not only play in the slot, but he seems to be a guy who can play outside as well. And I think that they like him in that Kevin Johnson role that they had last year, where if they need to go man to man, you've got Levi Wallace, who isn't physical enough really to do it. And you've got Josh Norman now on the outside, who just got torched regularly with Washington when they were playing that press man-to-man coverage. So I don't think they view either of those guys as man corners. Even though he's a smaller guy, I'm a big EJ Gaines fan, even though he and Taron Johnson have similar issues with injuries. counting on either of those guys to play more than 12 games is dicey at best. So you've got Gaines, who could factor into this whole fight as a guy who gives them a man-to-man option. So it's going to be interesting. They've also got an undrafted free agent named Ike Brown, who's out there too, who looks to be a solid development guy. He'll probably end up a practice squad candidate similar to Lewis. But I could see it being Johnson and Neal, and then them rotating Jackson and Lewis and potentially even Gaines in the middle there to see if somebody's got enough juice to stick around as maybe a third option in that spot. But it's more likely that they probably just keep those top two, your Taron Johnson and Saron Neal, and call it a day.
While we're talking about the corners, how confident are you that Josh Norman is going to be better than he was in Washington? And I'd say, you know, maybe being better than he was in Washington would be a little easy. How confident are you that he's going to be good enough that we would be satisfied with him as CB2?
Yeah, if you just Paul McCartney'd me and said, you've got to believe it's getting better, I'm going to John Lennon you and say it can't get much worse than he was in Washington, because that was the last few years, last year especially, he was atrocious. I think he allowed something like 67% of the passes thrown his way to be completed. He allowed 7 touchdowns and like 40 targets in there. So that was rough. But again, I think that was more, I'm hoping that it was more a defensive misfit than it was an erosion of overall skills, which makes the way that the Bills have set up this contract pretty solid, because only $1.5 million of it is guaranteed. If he's on the roster, he's got a $5.8 million cap hit. But if he doesn't make it out of camp, like if we get through practices, if there's any preseason and he's cooked and he just doesn't look like he can contribute, they can move on. And they're only on the hook for $1.5 million in a dead cap charge. So I'd put it at a coin flip. I'm hoping that he lasts a little bit longer than he who shall not be named, who retired at halftime of the Chargers game week 2 in 2018. But I'm not confident that he's going to be able to beat out Levi Wallace, who I'm also not that confident in trusting my CB2 to.
Wonderful.
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting little mishmash over there, because you've got it's first world problems, because you've got a bona fide legit all pro shutdown stud in Tre'Davious White. So obviously whoever's across from him is going to look less talented by comparison. But there were so many games last year where you just watched. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick literally just looked for where Trey White was, threw it to the other side of the field, and was surgically picking them apart. So that can't happen. It can't be that blatant a weakness. So either Wallace has to get better, or Norman has to just come out and be able to show that in Sean McDermott's defense, even if he doesn't revert back to his 2015 all-pro self at, you know, 32 going on 33 years old, something close, just better than the carcass that was getting burnt in Washington, would be helpful for the defense.
Yeah, I want to do a roster pop quiz with you.
All right.
I just want to give you some situations or some arrangements of the roster rooms and say, we're having so many of this position, here's the 4 or 5 locks. Who's number 6? And then we'll just go through and see where you land on some of this stuff.
You know, I'm a high school teacher, so these pop quizzes are good for me. I feel like my kids now, though. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, good, good. Well, I hope that you understand what the shoe feels like on the other foot. So, okay, if we do the wide receiver room, can we agree that they're probably going to keep 6?
You know what? I'll go with 6. I won't even make the argument for 7 yet, because 7 is just in my fantasy. I think they've always kept 6. So yeah, I think 6 is a fair number.
Okay. So if we're saying 6, then we've got guys who are safe, right? We've got Beasley, Brown, Diggs. I agree. Gabe Davis is safe. So we are at 5. or I'm sorry, at four. And then I also would say that Andre Roberts is safe as the return man. Are you comfortable with saying those five are locks?
I am, yeah, because otherwise you're not going to put Micah Hyde back there to fair catch on punts, like to be the Chris Watson of punt fair catching. And you're not, please, for the love of God, going to put Isaiah McKenzie or Ray McLeod back there to return kicks either. So it's got to be Roberts. I agree there.
Okay, so then who is number six? We've got candidates, you know, Nick Easley, hypothetically, Robert Foster, Isaiah Hodgins, and Ray, and Isaiah McKenzie.
Oh, man. I am on my coin flip here. Yeah, because I, like you, I am going to discount Duke Williams there. I think if they keep seven, you could make an argument, but I still, Duke is gone. My last two for six, I think, would be McKenzie and Isaiah Hodgins. And I like McKenzie because, again, I guess I deal in like too many projections here, but I like the thought of using McKenzie almost like the Green Bay Packers used Ty Montgomery as somebody who could almost sit in like a running back. Then he could go out and run routes. So I think that the coaching staff is going to prioritize McKenzie because he's a more versatile move piece. I think that's going to make some fans mad because I think Hodgins has some legit stud potential based on his size, catch radius. I've seen people guesstimating that they actually think that he's going to be a better pro than Davis. I haven't watched enough tape of either of them, but I'm going to guess McKenzie, and I'm going to hedge my bet, which I do a lot if you all haven't noticed, by saying that Hodgins would be my seven if I'm keeping seven.
All right, fair. Here's question number two. Is there any way that the Bills keep Reggie Gilliam over Pat DeMarco?
No.
Fair enough.
I just don't. And it's not that I want it to be that way. But if you, again, I think we've talked a little bit about how McDermott's got the kind of guy he wants in certain rooms. And I think that DeMarco is the kind of guy that he wants. Now, by the same token, Gilliam was a special teams monster at Toledo, and he could slide himself in. I think he's one of those dudes where this abbreviated preseason training camp is going to screw him out of a spot. I think he had a chance if you have a full off season. I think that Buffalo is going to try to slip him onto the practice squad, and we'll be talking about him in 2021.
Fair enough. Hauschka or Bass?
I think it's going to be Bass. I don't think you draft a kicker unless if Bass is miserable in the offseason, or if Hauschka is amazing, then you hold on to him. But I don't think you draft a kicker a few months after putting in a waiver claim for a kicker and not intend to keep that kicker. So I think this might be the end of Hauschka.
All right. So I have a question here because I'm going to make a presumption. Do you feel similarly to how I feel in that the fourth quarterback on the depth chart, Davis Webb, the Bills just love having him in the room with Josh Allen? They don't really have any desire for him to play or to be in that position, but they have him there largely as, you know, the guy who runs things like the Florida workouts.
Yeah, I think I could agree with that. He's not – the only way that he gets on the field is if Allen and Barkley and Fromm all are hurt or contract coronavirus. I don't think they see him as a player. I think they see him as a teammate, if that makes sense.
Sure. Okay, so understood that that's the role that Davis plays. Does Fromm, in your opinion, does Fromm make the roster?
In a normal year, no. But I think given the uncertainty around the coronavirus, because if somebody were to get sick, let's say Barkley gets sick and he's got to be gone, and they have already released Fromm and somebody else picked him up via waiver claim, they'd be stuck. So I do. I think that they'll end up holding on to this. Only be the second time that they keep three quarterbacks, and it's the first time that they've kept three proper quarterbacks, because the first year that McDermott was here, they kept it was Tyrod Taylor. It was Nathan Peterman. I almost blocked his name out of my head. And then the third quarterback that they kept was Joe Webb, but he was really a special teamer. So I think here that given the uncertainties with the pandemic, I think Fromm makes the roster as the emergency quarterback.
Okay, fair enough. So last question, and this is an important one. Is Cody Ford a tackle?
Ooh. I mean, the early returns are maybe. I think he has the potential to develop into a good one. I don't think that it's necessarily his best NFL position. I think that, and I don't know necessarily that Buffalo is looking to keep him there. I think that for this year, he will end up the right tackle. But if John Feliciano is able to parlay another solid year in Buffalo into a larger contract somewhere else, you could very well see Ford kicking inside and playing right guard. His struggles are not struggles that I think he can get better with. I don't think that you can be a big fellow who struggles with speed off the edge and get a whole lot better at struggling with speed off the edge, because I don't think it's a technique thing. His technique seems to be fine. I think it's a quickness thing. And I think that he's going to continue to be exploited by faster guys off the edge. And as I'm saying this out loud, I remember how well he did against Von Miller, for example, last year when they played Denver. But then there were days where he just was getting run all over the place, and the offense always seemed to bog down when he was in there, and they scored a ton more points, especially in the early going when Ty Nsekhe was playing right tackle instead. So I think the jury's still out. My gut says no. I think he's a guard playing tackle, but he's good enough to sit there as a good to above average tackle. I think he'd be a great guard.
Does Darrell Williams start any games for the Bills over Cody Ford?
Does he start any games over Ford? I mean, if we're talking like if Williams is 2017 Darrell Williams, then Darrell Williams should be the right tackle, period. I don't know that Darrell Williams is 2017 Darrell Williams. The knee injury he suffered in 2018 was pretty serious. And I think it was a couple of ligament tears and a dislocated patella. So he struggled to come back. And last year he struggled. They played him at left tackle. They played him at right guard. They played him at right tackle. They played him in a couple different spots and he just got beat up. So I'm going to go with no right now. But I'm open to changing my mind if I see him look like his old self in the preseason.
All right, fair enough. Well, that you passed the test. I'm a very easy grader, so you definitely you got so many effort points that you never really had to worry.
Yeah, so, I appreciate it.
Yeah, very good, very good. Sean, thank you so much for joining me. Tell people where they can find you on the interwebs, at least digital, Sean Murphy, if they wanted to interact with you a little bit.
Well, the best part about having a name like Sean Murphy is that if you Google me, there's like 4,000 of us. So I am as anonymous can get with a name like mine. So keeping off of social medias as a high school teacher is one of those things I try to do. So if you just follow over at Buffalo Rumblings, check out for my stuff. That's all you got to do.
Gotcha. Wonderful. Any other parting thoughts or anything else you want to get in before we hang it up?
Nah, man. I'm just really, really happy that you were able to have me on. I love doing this stuff, so I appreciate it, dude. Thanks.
Yeah, wonderful. Won't be the last time, and thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, man.
Well, that's it. That was a great episode. I mean, I really appreciate Sean. I had heard Sean talk on two different Buffalo Rumblings podcasts in the past. He had been on Breaking Buffalo Rumblings once with Anthony Marino, and he had had a conversation with Nate from Circling the Wagons after training camp last year, when Sean said that he was able to get a press pass from Buffalo Rumblings and he was on site for a couple of days and all that stuff. I heard a conversation that he and Nate had, and I just like how Sean talks. I like how he expresses himself. I think he's got some really helpful turns of phrase and describes things well. So I was excited to bring him on and hopefully expose a few more people in the Buffalo Rumblings world or in the podcast universe to Sean. I think he's a damn good get for Buffalo Rumblings, and I'm glad to have him on the team, and I hope that you guys enjoyed hearing from him. In the future, we will we'll be together again. And until then, I will bid you all adieu to please go and enjoy your weekend. It's always going to be too short, but I do hope you get some rest and you enjoy it. I will be back with you next week with another member of the Buffalo Bills, of the Buffalo Rumblings inner circle, of the Buffalo Rumblings team, a behind-the-scenes person who you don't always hear on the podcasts. And until then, Nick Bat out.